traveling around raising funds for the Navigators. It was really an exciting job, especially if you were visiting people. But there was one part of the job that wasn't too exciting. That was sitting at a phone with a phone book, about 3,000 or 4,000 cards, you know, like from the Chicago area. And there you were, calling people all day long. Contact people who were on the log mailing list. And you were saying, "Hi, my name is Russ Reed. I'm with the Navigators in Colorado Springs, Colorado." And they'd say something. You figured this out before long. But you were telling them that you were in the area, visiting people who were interested in Navigator work, bringing them up to date with what we were doing. We had a film show like the show, and just wanting if they'd be interested in seeing it sometime. Well, you know, the first hour was interesting. The first few minutes was fun. The first hour was interesting. The second hour was got a little monotonous. And about 8 o'clock at night, you usually call from about 10 to 9. About 8 o'clock at night, your ear was hurting, you know. You had cauliflower ear, literally, you know, from this foam being pressed against it. It kind of got on your nerves. So I set a goal to win everyone on the phone I talked to. Pardon the personal reference. One day, I was at a dinner, and this lady was sitting next to me. I introduced myself. She said, "Oh, you're the person who called me." I said, "Yes." I assumed there was no one else that called in Boston for 2 weeks, you know, except me. And she said, and we chatted a while. And then about three quarters of the way through the meal, she said, "Have we met before?" And I said, "No, I don't believe so." "Well, you know, when I talked to you on the phone, I felt I knew you." I just thanked the Lord right there. I didn't bow my head, but I just thanked the Lord. But I'd accomplished my goal. It is a lot of fun to turn a sour response into a friendly response on the phone. And you do it, but with your own attitude. Okay. Next situation.
Other ways to underwhelm people is to have the music playing or the radio playing loudly while you're on the telephone. Ring, ring. "Good afternoon, the Navigators." Another way to give people a snappy hello is to chew gum. Ring, 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 ring. "Good afternoon, the Navigators."
Just don't chew gum. In fact, when you're on the gate and you're eating, take small bites of food, because you never end up
Using slang always makes a good impression on people. Ring, ring, the knives.
"This is Lorne. Is Rod Sargent there?"
"Uh-huh, sure thing, baby. Just a second, I'll do it for you. Hang in there."
One of our fellows on the gate, and he said, "Could I speak, so-and-so?" And the party for Mark, but the gaffer was hanging there. It didn't bother Rod, and he thought, who else did he set that to?
It keeps a youthful air.
If you are having a committee meeting at the reception center, encourage your cohorts not to talk while you are talking on the phone. Ring, ring. Good afternoon. Have a good day. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Seriously, when the phone rings, you're down there. If you're conversing, the courteous thing is just to tone it down, or preferably just stop. Because you can get carried away, and the person calling in, it does, he may have a clue what's going on out here. And, you know, if it's one of us, we understand, but if it's somebody calling from Ames, Iowa, trying to find their long-lost son, and they just don't know what's going on.
Why don't they think about that? I have a plumbing shop background.
Yeah. A plumbing shop background? That's a good question.
Baker won the
first. Well, that would probably sound like a radio. Famous last word.
And now the Glenary Thespian Society brings you another exciting drama. Actually, drama. What to do when you get more than one phone call at a time, or how to panic when every light on the phone lights up. Ring, ring,
click. 5-4-Gene.
Mrs. Gwyneth, I need a replacement for the...
Ring.
Ring.
Hold on,
please.
Ring. I'll put her on the phone and answer this call on 50.
Ring.
Click.
Ring.
Good evening, the navigators. One moment, please.
Skip that pause.
Click, click. Well, now I've got them on hold. Go back to Gwyneth's. Click. Hello, Gwyneth.
Gene, could you just tell me who's on the
night watch tomorrow night? Ring, ring, one moment, ring. Well, I've got her back on hold. I'll get this call on 59. Click. Good evening, navigators. One moment, please. Click, click. Hi, Glenn. Well, I believe it's Rod Sargent. Okay. Well, I'll get this call back on 50, the first one to call.
Was that a 50?
May I help you, please?
Yes, can you give me directions how to get out to Glenary?
Yes, come to 30th and Mesa Roads.
I know where that is. Thanks a lot.
Click, click. Well, now I'll get this last call, 59. Click. May I help you?
Yes, this Jones Fish Market.
Oh, you've got the wrong number.
Thank you very much.
Now, really, you can that place can become kind of exciting. If I've had all four lines working at one time. I don't stand gate duty during the daytime so very much, so I've never had somebody drive up to the gate at the same time. And the radio, I've never been involved with the radio at the same time as the phone. But I assume all five could happen.
Six.
All six? Thank you. You could have more people driving up. So the best thing to do is just stay calm and take them one at a time. And if you need to, that hold button really is a valuable tool. When I'm down there, sometimes it's really confusing. I don't know what's going on. I'll always hit the hold button and start thinking. I'll say, what's happening here? What am I supposed to do next? You know, because they're all happy. They're sitting there waiting. Now, for example, if somebody does call in on an outside call and another phone starts ringing, What you want to do is take care of their business quickly. That's the objective. Or get them to the party they want to talk to quickly. Therefore, you don't need to explain the phone is ringing. They can hear it. So just wait till they kind of catch their breath in the middle of a sentence or something and say, "One moment, please." So I need to say, "You say, one moment, please, I've got to answer the phone. The other phone is ringing," or, "You know, this place is a madhouse." And just say, "One moment, please. Punch the hold button. Punch the line that's calling." And then all I have to do is say, "Good evening," or whatever it happens to be, the navigators. "One moment, please." You've got other party to take care of first. The other night, the last time I was on gate, during Christmas, I guess. There, I had three calls at the same time. The second guy that called me, the last guy that called me was Bob Giroux. He said, "Do things really get that busy there on Christmas morning?" Because all I said was, "One moment, please," and he waited. And he knew what was going on. So don't make a thesis. They can hear the phone. If you know, if you call someplace and you get, you know, "Good afternoon, Joe's Pool Hall, one moment," you figure out they're busy. You know, if you can't get back that those phone calls are waiting immediately or within a minute, punch back in and just say, "One moment, please." Let them know you know they're still there. Any questions on this? How to answer the phone?
A lot of times I think you can give priority to the outside call and you call back the local people.
Good idea. That's right. That's very true. If you are asked to take a message, be sure of your accuracy on the message. The way I do it, I learned this in radio in the Army, where I was a radio operator. If you weren't sure of a message, you repeated it back to the party. So that's what I do. I've taken it all down, and I say, "Now, is this correct? So-and-so, you want so-and-so to call you with so-and-so number." "That's right." Or if it's a materials order that's being phoned in at night, just repeat the whole thing back. It may take 5 minutes. That's all right. The objective is to be sure you have the order or the message or the information accurate. Include the time it was called in. People, I roar around and John tries to look in or something like that, and it's amazing how many times I walk in a situation, I'll say, "Hey, John wanted you, when?" "Well, I don't know, some time ago." "Well, I've been told John wanted me, you know, 20 times in the morning or 10 times in the morning. I've talked to him 4 times. Then he called just now, you know, or was it a half hour ago? Was it 8 o'clock? But this kind of thing compounds, you know, when you put a message on a fellow's desk the next day. Include the time the call came in, and then sign the message. That means you're assuming responsibility for it, of course. But if it's accurate, and you've included the time, you've nothing to fear, so go ahead and sign it. So in case he has a question, you can call back. He can call you and ask it. And I've always taken responsibility to see that message is delivered. Sometimes a call will come in at the gate for a fellow who's not in his room and I can't locate him on the glen. I'll take a message. And so I'll call his housing unit, where he lives, and ask somebody to, "Would you put this message on so-and-so's bed?" So they'll see it. Then I stick my copy of the message in my pocket. The next morning at breakfast, when I see him again, he says, "Hey, did you get the call last night from so-and-so?" If he says yes, then I'll toss mine. If he says no, well, hey, here's a copy of it. Just a little bit of thoughtfulness. Any questions on this? Okay? Now we are really going to have a fun time. Guess what we're going to do next? Take a test. Glenn, why don't you hand out the test paper? You got two. Oh, what? Just don't freeze up, whatever you do.
Just say,
leave the door open.
Just say, hang in there.
All right. Tell him to call it.
All right, baby.
Now you may have gathered from this test. Now this, really, we didn't try to be funny, completely at least. But these are situations that have happened. In fact, a few more things that have happened that weren't, you know, Israel had left out. Like a few last week, I guess somebody pulled up the gate and asked if they could eat here. Well, what do you say? I mean, do you say no and be inhospitable, or do you say yes?
And
what? So this happens. The main point that I'd like to make on this test is that this is a job that requires thought. It's not something that is done casually, off the cuff. And, you know, I do the best I can, and it'll all work out all right in the end. Now, you may not have wanted the responsibility of representing the navigators to the public. But you've got it. When that outside line rings, or when someone drives up the gate and stops and looks inquisitively inside, you are on the proverbial spot. And you are the navigators. In fact, in all probability, that you may be the only contact with the navigator this person knows. And to make matters worse, this might not be a Christian. And you may be one of the few Christians he ever realizes he's meeting. There you are, genuine Christian, no halo, no wings. You're stepping outside, and the way you treat this person, or mistreat him, the way you satisfy his needs, may determine what this person, or will certainly reinforce this person's impression of Christianity. As we go through these answers, or as we discuss the answers, it'll be pretty obvious that there is no clear-cut answer. Now, if you're like me, you're looking for a nice, neat, little cookbook recipe. You know, 1 pound of flour, 1 teaspoon salt, so much baking powder, liquid, stir it together, put it in the oven, and out comes the product. That's it. You can't miss. Doesn't exist, folks. It requires thought. Because every situation is different. You're dealing with different people. Now, when I'm on the gate, I have certain objectives. One of them is to be in charge. There's a certain way to lose control of the gatehouse or the gate. When I say the gate, I'm referring to phone calls coming, people coming and going, and so on. There's certain ways to lose the control. That one, that is to get confused or to get upset. Don't do either. Just don't do it. If you find yourself being upset, get control. If you find yourself being confused, stop and think. When I approach someone on the phone, or when I walk out of the gatehouse to greet that fellow looking in through the window, I walk out with a smile on my face. The biggest grin I can muster up. And with a friendly greeting, I say, "Hi, may I help you?" I've done two things. I've elicited a friendly response. I've never done this to anyone, no matter what they looked like when I first walked out. They didn't smile back. I have a cordial relationship established. If I walk out with the victory lost, he's in control. He's in charge, and he'll run the show. If I walk out in charge, in control, friendly, cordial, I've turned people down. I mean, I've had to tell them to do exactly the opposite of what they wanted to do, and many of them left smiling. Because here's a friendly fellow, you know, you can't do anything you want. Or you can do anything you want. Depending on what they want to do for the action. Okay. Any questions on this? Not on the question, but what I just said. You ever watch these, you seen it on a movie, you know, where they show the chorus girls and they're going out? As soon as they hit the curtain? Some people are obviously more spiritual than I am. I used to work in a ladies' shoe store as a stock clerk. When I first went to work there, pardon the reference, gals, but you know they had the area where they tried the shoes on, where the seats were, and the nice carpet and everything else, and it was all very lovely. And they had this partition. Floor-to-ceiling partition, wood oak partition, with three or four doors going through it back into the stock room and the repair shop and so on. And there were these great, big, heavy, thick drapes, you know, heavier than the Pink House or Great Hall or anything put together, just tremendously thick. They had to kind of fight you with it. I could never figure out why they had those there. So I was there a few days. These salesmen would come back, and they'd hit that curtain and close behind them, and they'd start cussing. And they would cuss all the way to, you know, where they'd taken this box out, they'd ram it in the shelf, grab this other box out, get to that curtain. Walk out. Say. I know all gals aren't this way, and all salesmen aren't this way. But I've always thought of that. I've been impressed that this, you know, this salesman, this guy, could change his attitude to sell a $15 pair of shoes. What can I change my attitude to? Make good presentation of Christ or the Navigators. In fact, I've got more going for me than he has, because obviously they weren't Christians. He's the only salesman I worked for in this part of the world. And I've got the Holy Spirit living in me. A God of peace, joy, security, all the rest. Okay. I certainly should be able to change my attitude if this guy can do it for $15 sale. By the way, every so often they didn't. It was really funny. Well, I'm not doing that. Okay. We shall press on. I'll read the question, and somebody volunteered their answer. You may have gathered, by the way, that this test is not going to be turned in. This test is for your benefit. You can check yourself out on it. It's 9 p.m. Thursday night. A car drives hurriedly through the gate, and I'm referring there, of course, the main gate is closed, the staff gate is open. You don't know who they are. They drive through the main gate, call them. You don't know who they are. They don't stop. What do?
Fire.
What do you do? Leo.
Well, identify the vehicle by the license or by the make or color, whatever you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And watch them go down.
Anyone else have another suggestion?
No, give them time, you know, to get back off. 5 minutes, maybe. And then call us.
Call us.
Why? Well, try and find out where they went, you know, call the shop.
Okay, your answer was try to get some identification from the vehicle, the make, the color, or the license plates, which may be hard to do at night, by the way. Maybe very hard to do at night. And then call the shop or call someone to see if they can be located. Is that your answer? How many disagree? How many agree? What are your gals?
Call security watch. I wait. I'll grab the car.
9 p.m. It's at 9 p.m.
at night.
9 p.m. at night.
Basically, the answer, question number two, same as above, but 2:30 Sunday afternoon, the answers are obvious. Get hold of someone. They can kind of look around or look around and find out what's going on. If it's on in the daytime, on the weekend, you have someone that is a security. If there happens to be no security, like if it's Sunday morning or some weeknight, get hold of someone. And then, you might call the castle, say, the car just drove up there. You might call a shop, the car just drove up there. If after a few times you call around and you don't know it, says, no, there's no car here, then you might locate someone and say, hey, will you go check on something? By the way, if it is at night and you're a fellow and you get the word, there's some car running around the glen, I don't know what it is, don't be here, I'll take someone with you. Take a fellow with you. They love it, really. Take a fellow with you. Okay. Question number three. It's 3:30 Friday afternoon. You walk into the castle and see four people standing in the gray room. You don't recognize them. What do you do? Who like? And what happens then, Bonnie? Can you? Okay. That's right. Okay. Oh, let's see. Who disagrees?
I might call the reception center first to see if they know who they are and if they have a recognition.
All right. Good suggestion.
I think I'd introduce myself and find out. Because I don't know, the wheels of all of them. And it could be somebody Gus Hill or somebody that I may not recognize, mm-hmm. and it might not be polite to chew out.
Brett?
Well, could you find out who they are and purpose them and inform them in a quiet way their visiting hours and quietly send them off the gate?
Those things are hard to do, by the way. That's the objective.
Well, I do basically the same as Lynn. I introduce myself and tell them that I did live here. And if I could help them in any way. And then they would usually come around and tell me what they're doing here.
That's right. The other day, I just finished eating lunch. I was walking from the dining room into the foyer. And the door opened. Here this girl came in. Never seen her before. And I said, hi, could I help you? Big smile of hers. Hi. Yeah. And she said, well, my name is so-and-so, and I'm here to see Reverend McClain. And then I just, out of the corner of my eyes, I saw him sitting there. I said, well, there he is right there. And he, of course, immediately got up hearing that and walked out. You might walk out and find someone, you kind of standing around, you say, but the idea of introducing yourself is very good.
The situation to start with.
Right. Again, it's a personable approach. Hi, my name is Russ Reed. Could I help you? And they'll say, well, I was here at a conference last year, and just passing through, and these are my friends I'm taking around. Or they might say, well, we're just looking around. Well, no, that's what you don't do. This kind of situation does require sensitivity, because you don't know who that person is. So what you might do, if you see someone come in like that, rather than, blow the whole war and tell Gus Hill to leave, but who knows, how many know who Gus Hill is?
He's a man
in the book. He's in the book. That's a good answer.
His wife's
a question. Yeah, his wife's a question. I'll answer a question for you. Gus Hill is a realtor who had a major responsibility in our getting married. He's a Christian in town. I understand. Well, is it right? Did he give us those good blankets? Those of you who are sleeping in those real nice, bright colored blankets, Those were a gift from Gus Hill a few years ago. I don't know how many he bought. It looks like about 100 or so.
Yeah, women call him up and want to know a good place to get land.
Gus Hill.
Automatically gives us a lot.
Yeah. So this is the kind of person you don't want to offend. You don't know who that person is. The Navigators is kind of a nebulous organization anyway.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what happened, a personal experience now with the Navigators. I had joined the First Baptist Church in San Francisco. They had a parking lot there, and I was a member after I was about 18, 17, and I pulled in the parking lot, close to downtown, a nice place to park. Got out of my car, I was walking up, and up went the window, and this gal stuck her head out. She says, "What are you parking here for?" And boy, that turned me off. It really did. That was my church. I joined it Sunday. I was a part owner. Well, I mean, I hadn't contributed a cent. You know, I hadn't done a thing. All I'd done is been a leech. But it offended me that this church secretary, who later on turned out to be a real sweet old gal, you know, would challenge my right to be in my church parking lot. Well, you know, the Navigators, how many used to feel the Navigators is your organization? I'm an advocate. Well, so, this is true. If someone's going to Glenn, now, what we want to avoid the situation we had a few years ago when the place was completely open and people just walked through it. You know, people would find tourists in their rooms. That's bad maintenance. That's kind of what we want to avoid. So sometimes, you know, and I started to say, if you don't feel confident you can handle this kind of deal, or if your experience has been that you're not always the sharpest in terms of public relations, and there's a lead man around, get him. You know, have Len or Jack or Will or Gene Duquay, or Bob Harrell, or someone that's been here a while, myself, John Crawford, someone's been to handle the situation, if they're nearby. You know, it's kind of ridiculous to perform surgery just because there's an emergency if there's a surgeon sitting next to you, assuming you're not a surgeon. You know, or if there's a surgeon in the next room. You know, doctor in the next room, they'll try to get first aid, get the doctor. I've walked in here sometimes and found, you know, people saying, "Wow, this is a wonderful place, good to meet you. We just walked in the door." And I explained, "Well, you know, we really, you're welcome to drive through, but we request you not go in buildings because they're occupied by our staff and guests." "Oh, well, we're sorry, we just walked in." And I said, "Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we just they show you around here," and I'd give them, you know, this was the music room, and this was the library, and this is the main dining room, this is the foyer, and they say, "Thanks a lot," and leave. Took me about 5 minutes, or 4 minutes. They probably left thinking I was the nicest guys they ever met. I accomplished my objective is not keeping them out of, you know, your room. Okay. It's 8:30 at night. This is question four. Oh, yeah, okay. It's 8:30 in the evening. You're on the gate. You hear the sound of a car accident on the road outside Glen Eyrie. And by the way, this has happened. What do you do? Who has an answer? No. How many agree? How many disagree? What would you do? Go and disagree.
Call the sheriff because
we're.
I
get
somebody
to get out
if they're
right
there.
Yeah.
Someone's
a vessel. Yeah. You're saying
it really
may
not be a car wreck.
Okay. John? You gonna raise your hand?
I was.
You have to do anything.
Well, you don't have to do anything.
They have to ask if they can.
But they're probably not here. If it was me, I'd like help. I think the first answer was basically a good one. Get hold of someone. You know, not necessarily, doesn't have to be Will. I wouldn't, you know, get John out of Pink House to go check an accident down outside the gate if Jean or some of her fellows are around. You might just, hey, go down and check out, see what's going on. Or there's been an accident. Or call me. You know, I'm down there and I'm interested.
Hey, Russ, after you call the police, what if...
We haven't done that for you.
Yeah, I've got that for you.
And what we're doing to see, what we're going to see if anyone needs assistance. All right. Now let's say this, our fella comes back in and says, man, it's a bad accident. There's all kinds of, you know, damage and people are hurt. And this happened, a high school conference. No, it wasn't high school. It was Youth for Christ from Denver 2 years ago. Car turned upside down, making the corner from 30th, going up Mesa, just roll over on its top. And a girl was in a state of shock. Someone remembers this.
Call Sal.
What do you do? So, and somebody comes roaring back in and saying, you know, there's been a bad accident, need an ambulance right away. You're on the gate, or one of our staff, you know, or something. What do you do? I didn't know that night, by the way, so I found out. What do you do? Who would like to answer that question?
Call the sheriff. Tell him what the facts are, and he takes it from there.
Okay? That's what we did. John?
I'm saying you could tell the sheriff that there's property near the main roads.
That's what we did. All right, I'm saying. Did the sheriff tell you to call the ambulance? What we did is I didn't call the sheriff, I called Colorado Springs Police. And I said there's been a bad accident, junction of Mesa and 30th, and there may be need for ambulance. Jack?
Oh, I like change of terminology on 30th. I called the sheriff's department and told him I was on 30th of Mesa. And he said, 30th and Garden of the Gods? I said, no. I mean, Mesa and Garden of the Gods? I said, no, 30th and Mesa. He couldn't find me, so I finally agreed, yeah, it's Garden of the Gods.
There is some confusion. Some maps, I'm looking at a map today, in fact, we're drawing a map, and it says 30th. Glen Eyrie.
Sheriff knows.
Yeah, Glen Eyrie. Bonnie? Well, that's true, by the way. Our nurses, if they go down there, and they're liable for suit, they can be sued. So, in fact, many physicians and nurses, I understand, if they see an accident, they'll just keep on going because of the problems they run into of being sued for $50,000, $100,000, $200,000, and most of them carry insurance.
Do we call the sheriff or the Colorado Springs Police? Do we call the sheriff because it's the county and not the city?
Well, technically, we call the Highway Patrol.
State Highway Patrol.
That's who came out, and that's what I discovered was responsible. If somebody comes roaring up, a stranger, saying, you know, there's an accident, need a sheriff and a nurse, oh yeah, they might say that. Do you have a doctor here, or we need a sheriff and an ambulance, say, here's the phone, help yourself. As far as I'm concerned, if I was down there, and if I got the word, we need an ambulance, I would not hesitate to call them. Or if I thought an ambulance was needed, I would give the call. Because if you're worried about legal responsibility, financial responsibility, the person for whom the ambulance is called is legally, in the state of Colorado, held responsible for that cost. So if it's pretty obvious, you know.
He'd appreciate it too, I bet.
Well, we got this gal who was in state of shock. We got the ambulance for through the sheriff. And the next day, I understand, the parents, or the brother and father or somebody like that, came to the gate and thanked us for saving his daughter's life. Apparently, it was quite serious. I don't think I thought it was that serious at the time.
Well, stranger, you let him call rather than call for him.
Yeah, if he wants to.
Just a little experience.
experience one morning about 3 a.m. I heard a tremendous crash and woke me up, but I didn't do much about it. About 3 minutes later, there was a knock on the door and two guys were standing there. And they just had a head on and they wanted to borrow a phone for the call to care.
Yeah.
Somebody was hurt. I don't know how I got back there.
Well, it does happen. One night in San Francisco, we were asleep, or I was asleep, and I heard this grinding noise, and I didn't know quite, you know, scraping, grinding went on for a while. It seemed like forever, but then I heard a few screams for help, and that kind of, and here was this car in the bushes outside of our house, not on our property, but on the divider, kind of not in them, but kind of like it had run down along the side of the road. And I looked, nothing was going on, and all of a sudden this gal stuck, you know, the half, top half of her body out the window and yelled, "Help, help." So I called the, you know, the police. Turned out this gal was running down this road, this fellow, and waved him down. He stopped, picked her up, driving down the road. She said some guys were after her, and sure enough, out came this car, tried to run him off the road for about 5-6 miles. And got to our place, finally succeeded. He got out of the car to talk to him. They got out with knives. He took off across the road, across the interstate, across the highway to a gas station. And mine was the first call that they caught. They picked the guys up about a block or so down walking. So it does happen.
Hey, Rob?
Yes?
How would you handle it if they did ask if we had a doctor or a nurse?
We do not.
We don't have a doctor or a nurse.
We certainly don't have a doctor.
What if they ask for a nurse?
I would say, boy, I would come right back with a better suggestion. I'd say probably ought to get an ambulance.
Is it possible to call a doctor?
Yeah,
thank you,
please,
for all
you've
got. There is, according to the Red Cross, there's never been a record of a Red Cross, a person who holds a Red Cross certificate being sued for malpractice. And many of us here do hold Red Cross certificates. We've been trained in first aid. So if that's the case, you know, you can do what you can. But there's never been a record of anyone being sued and won, that kind of a suit being won. Okay, we better press on here. Question 6. Good grief. It's 12:15, Tuesday afternoon, and a phone call comes from Mr. Sandy. What do you do? Who has an answer? Jack.
Call Millie Hoffman.
Okay. What if Millie's not there?
Call her this week. Are you giving somebody in the office?
What if no one's in the office?
Take the man's number and say you'll have a call. Have him call back.
Who agrees, disagrees with all that?
What?
It might be a long distance.
But, what would you do? John?
Well, I'd say if you get their number, that puts you responsible. I'd ask them to call back. You know, later on when they're by.
Anyone else disagree? Bonnie? Well, you're fairly certain Millie's going to get back, or someone else is going to get back. I would do, we've kind of touched on it, all of us. I'd do two things. I'd say, Mr. Sandy is out. Honestly, I wouldn't say that. What would I say?
Not available.
Or I can't locate Mr. Sandy. Something like that. Would you like to call back at 1 o'clock? Or could I get a message? Because I mean, I know where he is. By the way, never say so-and-so is off the glen. They don't know what the glen is, necessarily. They may think it's like the world. So, two things. Mr. Sandy isn't available, or he's out, or I can't locate him. Could I take a message, or would you prefer to call back?
Is he always gone?
No, Not necessarily. Though 12 o'clock is lunchtime. That was just a trip.
Hey, Rob. Trip. You wouldn't call in his house?
Never.
There's an extension there.
No. Never call his house. And I don't know if we're supposed to know what that extension number is. And don't bug people.
Never call me?
Call his house.
You never call him directly either.
No. Okay. Same question as above. It's 9:45 p.m. Monday night, and a call comes in for Mr. Sani. What do you do? I said, this, you know, this is so-and-so, can I speak to Lawrence Sani?
Ask him to call back in the morning after 8 a.m.
Why?
Because he's not there.
The office is closed.
Better reason. Yeah, office is closed. The office is closed. Could you call back in the morning?
What if it's an emergency phone call?
If someone asks, well, could I have Mr. Sani's home phone? What do you do?
Give it
to him. Don't offer it. Don't say, well, it isn't a phone book. Don't say, well, the office is closed. Don't get tomorrow morning at 8, but you can call him at home. You know? Because what's probably going to happen, Lauren may not object to the call, but the information he needs to talk with the guy is probably at the office.
Before we give the number, should we find out if it's the personal call or a business call?
That's hard to do. If someone asks for the number, I think we ought to give it. Now, the reason this you know, emergency deal came up a few years ago, Frank Lossell was living at the gatehouse, he and Patty, and midnight, I think, or 12:15, the call came in, and people to Lauren Sani. Well, Mr. Sani is in the Orient. But could I speak to Rod Sargent? Rod Sargent is in Europe. Could I speak to Jim Downing? Well, Jim Downing's in Chicago. Well, by that time, this, you know, bang, 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 Frank finally will say, well, could I help you? Well, I guess so. Send two boys camp brochures to don't understand the nature of the work, the organization.
That's the third time I've heard that, and I still don't believe it.
It was a Texan, too, by the way. either a Texan or an Oklahoman. Couldn't be anybody from East Texas.
Doesn't
think
they're
cowboys. But, so if someone asks for Rod's home phone number, or Downing's, or Jerry Bridges, or Evie Wright's home phone number, feel free, you know, give it to them. But don't say, you know, they're not here, but you can call them at home. You know, every so often it'll happen to me, you know, I'm on the glen, so I'm easier to get to, and I'll get a phone call in the shop, and inevitably it's a long distance call, and it's person to person, and the information I need is up in the office. Well, I don't know. I have yet to figure out how to avoid that. I don't know how to avoid that, but it does happen. So the same would be true with Lolly or Bob Giroux or anyone else. If they may be calling at 4 o'clock and it's 6 o'clock here or something. Okay, so giving them. And by the way, I would never give a gal's number out who lives in town. Unless it's asked for. I just wouldn't do it. The Bible says that a fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth his laughter. Don't tell everybody everything you know. Good rule in the army is a need-to-know basis. How many of them need-to-know basis? You know, you may have a security clearance for top secret, and there may be a top secret message sitting right there, but unless you need to know it, you weren't supposed to read it. Period.
Is there a specific time in which Lawrence Sani and Rod Sargent and so on are in the building? So someone says, when can I call tomorrow morning?
I tell them to call at 8 o'clock. Because they'll get a secretary. For instance, if the call comes in for Lauren, you dial, you know, 41. And say, Millie, there's a phone call for Mr. Lawrence Sani. Or, by the way, always repeat the message as you get it. If it's a message for Lauren, you say, Millie, there's a call for Lauren on 50. If you call, if it's for Lauren Sanny, if you say, Millie, there's a call for Lauren Sanny. If it's for Mr. Sanny, you say, Mr. Sanny. If it's for Sanny, you say, Sam. Now, the reason you do that is if that communicates something about that call. If it's for Lauren or if it's for Sanny, you can be pretty sure it's the person that knows it. May not be, may just be someone that's kind of crude. But, you know, but it might be a personal friend. But the in fact, you would never even get a you would never even get through to Lauren on the gate necessarily. You might, but usually Millie answers the phone first, so you just get the message to Millie, or to Morris, or to Yvonne, whoever it happens to be, and they'll handle it from there. Okay. Number 8. You're on the gate, someone drives up and asks if they could take a tour. What do you do? Call the ambulance, son. What do?
Call the hostess.
Call the hostess. Well, hostesses, speak up. You're about to be committed. Every time someone drives off the bus. Cheryl, what would you do?
What if that would be a conflict with the
now, that's very good. Very good. By the way, whenever you make a decision, whether it's you should buy a car, buy a suit of clothes, give someone a tour, go to Indonesia, the missionary, stay at Glen Eyrie, whatever decision you're going to make, your decision is never any better than your information. And if you think through, it's amazing how often I will call someone and ask them for a decision, leaving out half of the stuff that you know. Mm-hmm. And I go like, well, what's his last name? What's his first name? Where's he from? What's his contact? You can't, come up with a question board and give the survey approach. Let's see, where are you from? So on. But just kind of, someone drives up, I go out with my smile and say, hi, can I help you? Or good afternoon, can I help you? And they say, well, we'd like to drive around. And I'd say, well, we'd like to see the Glen. I would say, you're certainly welcome to drive around. And you kind of go from there. Now, one thing, Cheryl, you said that I'm a little hesitant about, and that's the idea of don't get out of your car. That is a, what?
Negative.
That's a it's a little negative. I prefer the phrase, the buildings, first give you a reason. The buildings are occupied by our staff and guests, therefore we request that you don't go in them. So we told them they can drive through, and that we would appreciate not going to go in. Then, if the security man comes up and say, "How can I help you?" They're guilty. They're guilty right then.
Did you mention about the Wednesday?
The what?
The Wednesday tour.
If they're not satisfied with the drive-through, I would. Now again, you've got to be kind of sensitive who's there. I happen to know who did this, and no one in this room did it, but Bruce Carlson was on the Glen, drove up to the gate, asked for a tour, and Bruce is a navigator staff representative where? I forgot where he was located. Where, College Station? And he was told, don't get out of your car. That was a week ago last Saturday.
Oh, Russ, though, if you tell them not to go in the building, you have not said they can stay. Would you just say, I couldn't get out of my car?
That's true. And, well, now, John, I probably should have treated him as John first, but I don't like to say things I can't enforce. I can ask them to leave a building, but I'm not going to shag around the Glen chasing them back in their car, if they step out to take a picture. Personally, I think if someone wants to take a picture of the castle, step around the car, click, step back in, that's fine. Now then, if you're walking around and you see someone hiking, again, walk up and say, hi, can I help you? They'll say, well, we're just looking around. Well, again, I smile and I say, well, now they may not have stopped at the gate, but I always have a reason for what I say, or I try to. I'll say, as the sign on the gatehouse says, you're welcome to drive through. However, we'd appreciate it if you wouldn't hike or go in buildings. Now, if they haven't seen the sign, at least I have a basis for what I said. It's there. And then you kind of hang around subtly until they get in their car and leave. You know, I'll walk back with the car with them, talking, saying, yes, it's beautiful, answering their questions. Well,
put a door
for it. Well, no, really, now I'm making it sound kind of sarcastic, because that may be the way we look at it. But from their standpoint, they may think, well, this is a really kind of friendly guy doing this. You know, I mean, they understand somehow. Well, they usually understand. They can't, you know, start a problem and all the rest. Okay. I kind of answered question 10 already. Yes?
What if the people asking for a tour have no, you don't know them in any way, and they may even be Christians, and they don't know who the other is, they're just going to tour.
Well, we have a safety valve. You know, a safety valve pops the pressure when it gets too big. We can say, we have a tour every Wednesday at 2:30.
That's for anybody that...
Anybody on. That, you know, Aunt Maud and... With the drive around, we've had very few problems. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I was worrying on the gate, I was told not to tell them they could drive through. You wait like a month.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's correct. Some people will just drive right, you know, it says, I forgot what the sign there says.
Yes,
visitors left lane or information, visitors information. If they drive on the right lane, they're on their way. They can drive through and drive out. If they stop, you go out and say, you know, may I help them? But don't try to flag them down, you know, as they go through the gate.
Sometimes that really helps to get you off the window because you don't have anything else to say.
What's that? Oh, drive through?
No, right. The Wednesday afternoon tour.
Yeah.
That was Carolyn.
Right. Don't volunteer the tour, but it is there.
What time is the tour?
2:30. Wednesday afternoon.
Except during Christmas and New Year's.
Somebody close the place down. Okay, let's press on to a different ground. Did you catch that about what to do when you walk across somebody walking around the property? Again, just walk up, smile, say hi, can I help you? And they'll usually tell you, if you ask them, may I help you, they'll usually tell you what's going on. They'll say, well, my name is Bruce Carlson, I represent the Navigators of Wallace Station. Or they'll say, I was here for a conference last year, or like one day there was a teenage gal and her parents were, well, daughter was here 2 weeks ago to the Youth for Christ High School Conference, and she told her we wanted to see the place. So I kind of walked around, walking back to the car, and they were thrilled. And I was very happy. Just, may I help you? Very positive. Get the information you need, and act on it. The main gate is open, and someone drives up to the gate asking if they may purchase some materials. What do you do? Nope. You call the switchboard and send them all the way up to the international headquarters.
Give them
a map.
Huh?
What? Number 12? It's the same thing, but office is closed. It's the noon hour or it's in the evening. What do you do?
I'd probably give the materials brochure if we have a banner and ask them to come back when it's open.
That's right. Tell them when it's open. Next, you know, if it's Saturday night, tell them to be open Monday morning, 8 o'clock.
What if they say we need these information at the church tomorrow?
Well, you might check around. If it's an emergency, you know, if it's a real problem, just a second. Let's not lose it. If it's a real problem and they have a need, I think we ought to help them out. You know, I mean, I've called Larry before, and I've gotten a phone call on Saturday morning and from a guy in, where was it, Larry? Or were you here then? I think it was somebody in Garden City, Kansas. No, not Garden City. Wichita, Kansas. He said, man, I've got to have these Bible studies by tomorrow morning. Can you get them for me and put them on a Greyhound bus? And I said, sure. Anybody who wants people in the Word, I'll help. You know, so Barry got the Bible bags in, and I hauled them down the Greyhound bus and shipped them to Lebanon. It took my time, but, you know, remember the story about the farmer holding his big sow up to this acorn tree? So I stopped and said, man, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm feeding my sow acorn. He said, well, isn't there a faster way to do that? He said, yeah, it was time to go home. What are you doing? I'm feeding my hog acorn. The guy said, isn't there a faster way to do it? He said, sure, but what's time to a hog? Well, I can invest my time. You're on the gate. A phone call comes in for Warren Myers. Maybe a person-to-person call, by the way. Or Evans Moohoo Norgie. Or Jan Pearson. Or Rich Higgins. Or Al Van Hyde. What do you do?
You have 5 minutes to answer that question.
Simplest answer in the world. You take a poll of your trustee. You take a hold of your trusty Rolodex there. If you need to, ask the spelling of that last name, Norgie. And you flip through it, and you say, Evans, Moohoo, Norgie. So-and-so, you know, 28484008, Nairobi, Kenya. And you say, you may reach Evans, Moohoo, Norgie at this address or at this phone number in Nairobi, Kenya. If it's a call for Warren Myers, you can reach Warren Myers at this number in Ames, Iowa. If it's Rich Higgins, just 1 second, I'll wait for one moment. If it's, no matter who it is, their name, let's see, if all the names aren't yet on that Wildex, they're going to be on in a couple of days. But every name, every contact, every staff member, and the navigator work, U.S. and overseas, plus anyone else we can think of, as somebody might call us about, will be on that Wildex. Jerry Gould's phone number in La Junta, Ray Cotton's phone number, you know, you name it, it'll be there. If it's not there, there's a good chance we don't know who he is. You say, well, I can't locate his number. So, by the way, this will happen sometimes. Somebody will call in wanting, this happens every so often, wanting their son. He joined the navigators and he disappeared from sight. I haven't heard from him. Where is he? What have you done with him? Well, if you get in a bind like that, call Will Hopkins. That's right. If you can't get a hold of anyone, you don't know quite what to do, kind of ask questions. Well, he was going to Blacksburg. Blacksburg. Well, who's in Blacksburg? His Bible's in Blacksburg. Call this number, and they might be able to help you.
Where's Blacksburg?
Blacksburg
is in Blacksburg.
That happened once, by the way. That was the wildest miracle ever. My mother. Is your mother? Skip 13.
Ooh, yeah.
I better hurry, you're all... Okay, you are a fellow... this is a good one. You're a fellow, you're driving through the gate. You notice that some strange fellows or people you don't know, are one or more, are in the gatehouse talking to the gatekeeper. Or you may have gone through a couple times, like you're driving, roaring truck up to Castle Concrete Creek for a load of sand. You went up, these people weren't there, today, and you come back, they're still there. What do you do?
Bust it in.
What do you do?
Say, boy, I wish I could win with that.
Well, bust it up. Well, it's very simple. Very simple. Pull up to a stop with your truck or car or whatever you happen to have. But this is just out of consideration for the girls. Because apparently sometimes they presume these people leave. They don't want them there. Pull up to a stop, roll your window down, and that kind of signals, come here. It's not meant that way. But that'll give the girl an excuse to walk out of the reception center. And then you say, and if you get that kind of a call, just stop what you're doing, go on down. Dinner can be a half hour late. Forget it.
Get back and check the radio that it's not.
That's right. Yeah, check the radio.
I can just hear it. Russ, I need you down here to fix the phone.
Well, I come back and say, well, boy, couldn't you call, Leo or someone? No, I think you better take care of this one. I'll come down. Very cooperative. And gals, if a salesman is down there and he's a little overly friendly, don't try to evangelize him, tell him to show up.
Give him the mic. Give him Fred Downing. Fred Downing.
I can't hear you.
Give him Fred Downing.
Yes, that's right. Okay. You're on the gate. Someone drives up and asks about a job. What do you do? The folks are running overtime. Let's see. If you guys want to stay or do you want to go to your Bible study? Why don't you go ahead and go on to your Bible study, I think, and we can throw stuff in.
Nice having you.
Yeah.
I think that giving up a map kind of maybe creates more problems than it solves sometimes. Curiosity and so on. Where if you just say, follow the signs of the state and national officer, follow the signs of the perfect there for people. I don't use those maps. What do you think about that?
Well, people are going to roar around. They'll roar around whether they have a map to guide it or not.
I mean, the signs are all the way
at
the office.
They
follow the signs
of the national
office.
That's true.
Somebody's in the same
bar. Well, I do whatever seems to be most comfortable for you. But personally, I would prefer a map, and I could say, you'll come to this fort and you'll do this, you'll come to that fort and you'll do this. Those who can't join the girls in the Bible study. Okay, you're on the gate. Someone asks about a job. What do you do? Let's see, who has? Let me borrow a pencil here. Seriously, what do you do? This happened a week and a half ago. It happens all the time. Who was that?
I would have John explain to someone like yourself.
You could do that. That'd be a good approach.
It's true, we're not set up to hire like that. Or...
Well, that's what I would tell them. I would just say, we recruit our staff through our ministry. And we don't hire like an oil company. Right? It's great. If they say, I'd like to talk to someone about it, call him the old Johnny, the old mayor, something like that. But just tell him the facts. A friend of mine, Bob Bird, working for, ran a print shop, printing company in San Francisco. He said he discovered a basic principle how to stay out of trouble. He said, always tell the truth. You never have to remember what you said. Okay, Bill Grant drives up. Asks if he can drive his friends through. What do you do?
Feel free, Bill.
Anyone disagree?
That would be a dollar.
A dollar?
Yeah, for a dollar
he
can do that.
For a dollar he can do it.
Who's Bill
Grant? Anyone else is here? Good question.
Yeah.
Who's Bill Grant?
He's on the list.
He's on the list.
I don't think Bill is on the list. I don't think so. Why are
you? On the Rolex list, or is he on me?
He might be on the Rolex.
Okay.
Yeah, he used to be here at the Glam Navigator staff. Worked service in Denver, now he lives in Colorado Springs, works here. Is employed in civil service in Fort Carson, is involved in local night ministry. Well, of course, Bill Grant can drive his friends through. You may not know who that soul is that drives up that gate. It may be Bruce Carlson, it may be Bill Grant, it may be, you know, we could go on and on with any name. It could be Jerry White. Who's Jerry White? Close, you're warm.
Yeah, you're warm.
He's an officer.
He's the teacher at the Air Force Academy. He's an Navigator staff member in charge of the work there. So when you're on the gate, you are on the spot. There is no way getting around it. You don't know who is going to come in next. You may not even know why they're coming by sight. Well, you can imagine turning that one down. Yeah. Or telling her, "Oh, you don't get out of your car, lady."
You don't get out of your car. One big problem is Downing Boys.
Yeah, where are the Downing Boys?
They have to come in a new car every time you turn around.
Yeah, that's right.
In the swimming pool.
Well, they're so hard. They tell you. Right,
yeah, now they tell you.
Well, yeah.
Downing Boys.
Yeah.
Which is good.
They don't like that. And I can't say that, but I mean, I don't agree with them, but the fact they don't like it. But I can see why they don't like it. You know, I mean, I.
They're not around it.
Yeah.
What so, if Billy Grant were along? Were to come up? Did you study it too?
Yeah.
Oh,
no, that's a good question. What would you do if you suddenly saw Billy Graham, or you happen to know Theodore F., or.
I think we get
or. You'd probably say, yeah, there, what would you say? What would you do? Well, I would, you know, let them do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
And then I would call. I'd call, you know, 41. Billy, this is Russ Reed. I'm going with Billy Graham, John McGlone. And I'd call John Dark. John, as long as you know, it's Billy Graham, John McGlone. And then, you know, if I was in the 80, you would call me, you would call Will. Let as many people know as you possibly can that Billy Graham was on the line, or Theodore Rett is on the line, or something.
And the bill went on, okay.
So that, you know, if Billy were to suddenly arrive, you better believe that Lawrence Sanders would like to be here. In fact, I would, if Billy Graham, Theodore Rett, Lawrence Sanders, oh, I'd call him home. Now, in all probability, that would never happen. You know, someone like that who's been around that much would call in advance and say, I happen to be in town, or I'm in Denver driving through, or something like that, and probably stop off and see the place.
Cliff Barrows was here on the
announce. Like I said, it does happen. Is he picking his boys up?
No, he came with one of the ex-NAB representatives.
Tab.
He carried away when he was there talking, remember?
Yeah.
Take him out like that.
He just drove up the gate and Judy went out.
They've been locked out. They just brought it there right through.
So it happened. So you just don't know who it is, so you really are on the spot. Wonder why.
It's always a new person on the gate to get those things.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's all, yeah, that's right.
So hurry, be an old person. Don't have it to you.
Okay. Same
situation. You say, can I help you? He says, well, I was here for a conference 2 years ago. What do you do?
Tell me to drive through.
Tell me to drive through. All right? How many agree? How many? It's hotter at the gate, guys, so don't worry.
I've heard a lot.
How many disagree?
Let me add, if I can help him.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And maybe he wants to see some individual.
Uh-huh. All right. What if he says, I want to drive my friends through and look at the castle?
You mean the religious castle?
Mm-hmm.
Come back. Maybe call someone else. Call my name up.
Well, if it's a conferee, the first thing I'd do is I'd offer a tour. If they kind of decline the tour drive-through, and I'd say, would you like a tour guide? Now, what if he said no? What would you do then? Bob?
Well, who's the conferee? He's nobody, right? I don't think he's going to get a 3-day deputy on the outside.
Maybe one of the largest givers and friends we've got.
That's right. He may have bought this carpet.
That's right.
He,
you know, we had a, when we were working on the Great Hall, we were raising money for the Great Hall, we broke it down into projects, and I forget who it was, Rod or Leroy introduced it, and he said, now some of you here, this is an Oklahoma bunch, some of you here, you know, he mentioned this part or this part. He said somebody, for instance, somebody may want to buy the heating for the Great Hall. It was, you know, $2,000. And or you may not have that much to get. You might want to do a little less, but you know. Later on, after the meeting, this one fellow came up to Lee. He says, Lee, I'd like to buy the heating. Now, if somebody else wants to buy it, no problem, let them do it. I'll buy something else. You better believe we want to show that guy through the glass. I'd say a conferee, you don't know who he is. And I'd say conferees receive preferential treatment. If they don't want to, in fact, frankly, now, again, I'm going on a limb when I say this, but if I'm in the gatehouse and a guy drives up and says, I'd like to go to the castle, do you want a tour? I was here for a conference 2 years ago. Do you want a tour guide? He says, no. I'll ask him, do you know your way around? You know, are you sure you can find out? The guy will say, yes. I'm kind of asking that question to give you time to think. He may say no. Come in, maybe I don't do that. If he says yes and he looks like he's telling the truth, he makes a good impression, I'll say fine. Well, that's your decision.
Somebody down here and tell him this guy's coming. I'll be on the lookout for him.
That's what I wrote that. Use your own head.
Yeah, use your own head. That's right. It's the one that they roll. Will said it is very true. Call up and say, I just gave a fellow permission to go through the castle. You know, just kind of keep an eye out. I've gotten called like that, and I go out and met them and say, hi, help you, Russ Street. Oh, they're looking around. Well, yeah, can I show you around? By that time, they say yes or no. I make it look like I'm just, you know, happen to be there.
What are that type of situation at night, though?
That's a different situation. Well, I'd be very hesitant about letting someone on the line at night. And since the gals are gone, the main reason is I'm concerned about the girls. I don't want any stranger running around Glen Eyrie at night because these girls feel secure. And they're walking home by themselves at midnight. You know, it never has happened, and if I can help it, it never will. And if you run into a real problem, and we've had Christian, we had the head of the Christian Conference Center in some place, you know, he about turned everyone off we talked to. We put our reception, the gatekeeper, in tears all day, and we shoot out Fox and Espel, which I got to Espel.
No,
he got to me on the phone twice. Well, you know, you just run in that kind of situation. You kind of let them do what they want, but you watch them. You know, just, if you're on the gate and you make a decision, you are making a decision for Lauren Sanning or John Crawford. If you make that decision, basically, you should have all the resources that Lauren Sanning or John Crawford have.
For instance, did you make the decision rather than call G or you and you make it?
Well, that's a good question. If you don't want to make the decision, or if you don't know what decision should be made, and by the way, I think it's perfectly reasonable not to want to make the decision, because you may not have all of that. You don't want to borrow my sweater?
Yeah.
Here, Mac, you look cold. I'm warm. What's going on?
You got a fire?
You may have all the facts. You may not want to obligate John Crawford's resources. You know. Or just realistically, you may want help. You know, I will sometimes get a letter in the mail, and a guy will ask something, and I'll say, good grief, let's say, Gene, what do you think? Or Frank, what do you think? Or, you know, what should we do? I may be making up my own mind what to do, but I'm bouncing off someone else to get some feedback. So if you want to call me and say, hey, I've got a deal here, and you can even do that on the phone. You can, and on the phone when he's in the room. You just say, let me check. Russ, so-and-so here wants a tour. Well, one of the first things I'll ask is he in the room? And you say yes or no. Well, then I can ask you questions. You can answer yes or no to, and he won't know anything that's going on. I do it for an awful long time. So if you don't know what to do, get help.
So you call the FBI.
Yeah.
Call the sheriff.
Someone calls and asks if their church group or their Rotary Club can tour Glen Eyrie. What do you do?
Tell them about that.
Tour on Wednesday. What else
would
you do?
Call Jan Jensen. Yeah. That's hard to do.
Basically, those two things. Say we have a tour.
Call Jan Jensen.
She is responsible for arranging all special tours. Now, I would offer the Wednesday tour. I would never offer, you know, get what you got before you...
Get what Jane got.
Yeah. Right. Don't obligate Jan if the 2:30 tour, first end of the day, if the 2:30 tour will be acceptable. If not, you know, you should call Jan Jansen. If it's Friday night, well, she's in the office, 8 o'clock, Monday morning. Mm-hmm. That's just the way business works.
He's going to run the bank, isn't he?
Yeah. Number 18. Okay, we've taken care of Gus Hill. What?
18.
Oh. Someone calls and says they are passing through and wonders if we can put them up for the night. What do you do?
Yeah. I call you.
Are you?
Yeah. Call me or what?
Or Devin.
Gene or John.
Can't find the answer, no.
I'd first get all the information I could so I could tell you.
Yeah.
Because it could be Mr. Billy Graham's aunt, you know, or something like that. And if you got information, it helps you.
That's right. Nothing is worse than getting a phone call and somebody says you got to make a decision and you don't have any information to bake it on.
Yeah.
If they were close in, they'd probably tell you they were. That does bring up a sideline question. What if say you and John are gone, and it happens to be someone that we know, say it's Bruce Carlson, and he got broken down, went on the way to
somebody being charged.
Could we make the decision that yes, I would think so?
Well, in the case of you, Bruce Carlson's a good example. Yes, usually if we are
if we're not here, of course, Will can make a decision, or Len, or any of the lead men, as far as I'm concerned, could make a decision. Not just...
can I make one?
What?
Could I?
For Bruce? Yeah. Then let someone know what you've done. But
if it's just Joe Snow from the Air Force, that's true.
Well, if we can't find anyone. See, we don't... Again, we've had problems or difficulty with people being on the Glen. You know, dear brother passing through, needed a place to stay, and I think there's one guy who was here, how long? Well, a week and a half.
Yeah, this guy just...
He was barring people stationary.
Need a place to stay, chilling hot dogs, and he knows good company.
He was barring people stationary and their stamps and, you know, just making himself really at home.
Well, I think he got his information about 15 years ago, too.
How's that?
Spent 2 days or 2 weeks to go in.
That's still open. Servicemen.
Oh, okay.
Any serviceman getting out of the service and invited to stay 2 weeks.
He had any contact between the 15 years ago and that.
Now the
people are running around on Houston. They're Christians, they may be ex-missionaries or homeless, different things. But all of a sudden they got out the gate, you know. Here we are, lucky people.
Now this this isn't your decision, but to let you know what I would do, if someone roared up to the gate and said, here I am, house me, I'd say, boy, we'd love to take care of you. Let's see, I'll make a reservation for you at the Glen Isle Motel, or Motel 6, and take you out to breakfast tomorrow morning.
There's no
Really, I'm sorry, that's exactly what I do, right? And the navigators would buy that man's meal and buy his overnight housing with no questions asked.
Well, if he was a missionary, like, from someplace, mm-hmm. is that right? And he has to come here and
he asks for housing, he'll get housing.
But not necessarily here?
Not necessarily here.
And we would pay the tab for that?
We pay the tab.
But we don't make that decision.
You don't make that decision. That's my decision, or Will's decision, or John's decision, or Rod's decision, or
Freud's decision.
Just because this guy rolls up the game and says, I'm a missionary, doesn't mean anything to me.
We all are all
For example, a few weeks ago, we had this guy show up at midnight.
Sure.
Well, I think Gene made a good decision. And really, what else we could have done? This car did break down. It was outside the gate. We couldn't really put him up in the motel. The fellow acted peculiarly, but in the process he told me, well, I haven't had any sleep for 3 nights and eaten in a day or so, something like that. So he was a little agitated and a little disoriented, but, you know, he's probably just tired. So Gene said, well, here's a bed, go to sleep. Well, he turned out to be a genuine, bona fide schizophrenic, as far as I'm concerned. Now, I'm not a clinician, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. Doesn't get help. You know, he's dangerous. Well, now, folks, don't go looking for trouble. You know. What would I do?
Yeah.
What, that's all I got?
Yeah.
Well,
I didn't know.
I'd do what Gene did. I don't know what else I'd do.
I think if it happens again, I would get a truck and take him to a hotel.
Yeah, well, I think I would now, too.
Yeah.
Will his car break down?
Outside the gate, right outside.
I think you're free to call the sheriff on that too.
Pardon me. More information. He had been here at a conference. Came to see John Crawford. He said, "I want to see John Crawford or Russ Johnson." In fact, we think
I think Gene found him down by the road, walking up from the gate. Of course, the gate was locked. Mortgage locked. Walking up from the gatehouse by the road was up to the greenhouse area. I think he was going to the pink house.
Where were you?
He was coming back from my watch. Walking back down.
Hi.
Take a moment to explain the philosophy behind hauling the guy to the motel.
Nope. Oh, the philosophy?
Yeah, behind taking the guy to the motel rather than making him feel like we're a big bad wolf.
To him, you mean?
No, to us.
The missionary?
Yeah, okay. Missionary driving through town and he heard about the navigators way back under some palm tree and thought he'd drop in overnight, didn't call or anything. And we haul him to the YMCA or Motel 6 and buy him breakfast and make this a big bad wolf because we didn't let him stay on our beautiful ground.
No, sir. I would just say, man, I'm sorry we got in your room.
No, but could you explain the philosophy why we do that?
Why we do that? We don't know.
Once he gets his foot in the place like this other guy, this schizophrenic, once he was in the room, we couldn't do anything.
Yeah. Day for day. I was scared. I told the girl, do not walk home at night by yourself.
Don't be anywhere. You told him not to be anywhere by himself.
Yeah. I was scared. I was concerned.
The guy just, he told Gene, so I'm going to see John, and he left. You know, he didn't wait around.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean,
and you can't.
That's it.
Yeah. He's gone.
This we don't run a motel. We don't run a hotel. If someone hasn't thought through in advance to make prior arrangements, many ways the easiest thing to do is get a motel. Now, three years ago, I guess just after we were married. Must have been about a year after we married, almost because it was the summertime. We got a phone call from a fellow in, where he was going. He was coming in at 3:30 in the morning, or 1 o'clock in the morning, some ridiculous hour, by public transportation. I'm from Australia. My wife and I and family are touring the world. to spend the night there and take in an accountant. Well, I said, I'm not sure what will actually have any housing available or housing available at the conference. I suggest that you get a motel in town. And I gave a couple names, motels. Give me a call next morning. Love to have you out, give you a tour. They were sitting in the meeting and came out. We gave him a tour. He wanted to sit in a meeting, so we, Carol and I, down with his family, we sat together that night in the meeting, invited him to dinner. We had dinner here. We helped get the material they wanted. Got a Christmas card from him last year. Before last, well, he thought it was the greatest thing ever happened. Glen Airy can run you. That's bad news. You got to run Glen Airy. Yes.
Is this, do you have a phone number in the gatehouse or hotel that you can give me?
Well, this would probably come outside of the gatekeeper's responsibility. I would, if I was the gatekeeper, and I think I'd call someone for help on this one. I'd say, look, we've got this fellow here that wants housing, what should I do? Basically, it isn't your responsibility. Let's clarify this. We're getting off the subject. If they want housing, get the pertinent facts, the name, where they're from, whatever else you can without pumping them. Then refer the call or call myself, John, Gene, Will, any of the who happen to be around. Probably that order of priority.
Russ?
Yes.
I've had people come up and want to just rent a room.
Yeah.
And
I think that you can tell the town, but I don't know if that's all we have.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, we don't rent rooms, anyway.
So one would just pay for the night.
Of course, you're leaving, too.
You want that. But, you know, I thought at the time that's all we wanted, was a place to stay. We got the navigators or something.
That's right. Basically, on this kind of request, get a hold of someone, you know, who has the experience and has the authority. Obviously, for example, you don't have the responsibility to allocate funds for a motel for someone in the town. You can allocate your own funds, but you can't allocate my funds, and you can't allocate the navigator's funds. You're just outside of your area. You follow that line of reason? So get someone who has the responsibility for spending that money. There's a living in Crawford's home out in Oakland. Three fellows roared in and said, you know, we're from so-and-so's area and want a place to stay. And John said, well, we're all filled up, fellas, but I'll call the Salvation Army and see if they can put you out. They sure left fast. Then, a couple days later, they said they were from Russ Johnson area. And Russ, a couple days later, or a week later, a month later, John saw Russ and he told him. He said, what are they? Russ never heard of them before in his life. Didn't know who they were. No idea who they were.
Contact.
But that's an assumption. They may have had nothing to do with the navigator. We had somebody roar up at the gate and said, I like a tour. I know, what was it? Addie
Rosenbaum?
Well, but they didn't use that name. Addie Adenbaum. Well, no, they said Rosie Adenbaum.
How well do you know
her?
I heard
it come. It was four fellows in a car. Well, it was Rosie Adenbaum, used to be Doc's secretary.
Yakima.
Well, they heard the name someplace, pulled up, dropped it, won a tour. Well, that's no big deal. You know, tour is a tour. But these three fellas wanted to spend the night in Crawford's home, where he had one, you know, gay boy was probably 6 months, Helen, one or two girls, and a couple fellas with him. Man, come on, you guys. Relationship. They won't believe it. And walk off with it.
Well, they can cut a lot of contracts. On the first day of the conference, the main gate open. One night, I was on the gate there, and the gate was open. Some car comes roaring through there, and a lady and a couple of girls in here. And I just had to jump up and go out and stop her. She was going to go right on by. And she kind of smiled. She just said, to her, can I help you? She said, we just wanted to go through that big house.
One nice thing about gates open and so on. A lot of people, there's a lot of people roaring around this place that feel this is theirs. You know, so you may say, well, why all this concern about security? Has anything ever been stolen?
We lost an eagle.
Yeah, we lost an eagle. So, or is it a prank or what? But it used to be beautiful. How much do you say it weighed, Bill? 100-pound eagle weather vane on top of the rocks over here.
And our cash box.
And our cash box, that's right.
And a bed matches your fine taxes.
So far, we've only missed one eagle weather vane and one cash box from the kitchen. Not much. 15 years back, not bad. But there is a need, you know, for a certain amount of security. They can't steal the weather vane again. We've now locked the cash box up in the conference office. Okay. Someone calls for Rod Sargent.
You have to know he's in Germany. What do you say? What do you do?
Available to the phone?
No, I'm not. I'm gonna call
Germany. What do you say?
See if you're talking to get the assistant.
Secretary?
Available. As the president.
Could you just refer that call to the secretary?
That's right. You say, one moment, please. And dial 405 and say, Boris, Rod Sargent, call. If the office is closed, what do you say?
There's nothing wrong with gentlemen in Germany.
You know he's out of the line.
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I wouldn't do it. Yeah. I wouldn't do it. For a couple of reasons.
That's what the secretary's
doing.
Yeah.
I
didn't know it was.
Damon?
Office is closed. It's not available. Call back. Next
week. I would assume he's going to rush. I would know who it was.
Oh, well, that's a different story. If you know where the person is.
I wouldn't want him to know that his family was here without it.
That's right. Okay. It was later on time to say, well, he's in Germany.
I mean, there's somebody there. I realize who they were.
But if it's a call and they say, you don't know who it is, and they say, speak to Rod Sargent, and it's 8 o'clock, or whatever it says here.
Doesn't save time.
Doesn't give a time. Okay. But it's in the night. That's when we're working, most of us, on the gate. You can just say, the office is closed. Could you call back 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, or if it's Friday or Saturday or Sunday, 8 o'clock Monday morning? Jackson?
Can we get on that personnel list of phone numbers? The names of the secretaries, say for Rod Sargent.
But you wouldn't call them home.
No, I mean the name of the secretary for those people.
We could.
Because what I've had to do is call somebody and say, who's Rod Sargent's secretary? And then tell me. And then refer the car to call to her.
Why don't you just call his number? 405. Yeah.
There's a flat leaf. There's a 9.
Then I'll just call. Now, it used to be a little different situation. People lived on the Glen,
yeah,
and the navigators tried to operate 24 hours a day. Okay. Well, the office no longer has that philosophy. Now the office operates 8 to 5, within reason, Monday to Friday. If a call comes in, again, if they want Rod, the information is probably at the office. Why call them at home? Why refer them to his home, or why refer them to his editor? He said, the office is closed. It'll be 8 o'clock Monday morning, or 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. You call them. Now then, I would never say someone is in Germany or taking a trip around the world for two reasons. One, it may sound a little braggadocious, like we're taking a trip around the world. Or, as someone here said, oh yeah, I wouldn't want to tell anyone, any stranger, that Diane Sargent and Ronnie Jr. are home alone. Period. Yeah, you got to think on what information you're giving out. You may be giving out information you don't intend to. When I was in the Army, I was in radio, and I guess it was true. I was told it often enough, but when you're in combat, two outfits zero in on you with their artillery. Yours and theirs. And it's a waiting game. They zero in on you because, you're on the radio 5 minutes and they can pinpoint you down to a few inches from where you are. They zero in on you and they're waiting to see if you'll slip some information out accidentally. And once they decide you aren't, in come a few rounds. Yours zero in on you, because they're waiting until you start slipping some information on accidentally. And guess what happens? In come a few rounds. Fastest way in the world, silence radio, is to blow it up. So, there's no artillery here.
In the world by yourself, huh?
Yeah, that's right. You really are. That thing you feel very much alone. No.
Well, it could be a possibility that this guy may know someone over in Germany and try to kill the guy, too.
Possibly. Anything is possible. But the basic thing is just don't give the information out. You know, if they want to call Rod, they may just want to talk to his office. You know, that nebulous thing.
I read something in the book that said that at night time calls that are of an emergency nature or important business to refer the call to the secretary after hours.
Now we changed that a little bit just now, and we'll change it in the book. What we're going to do now is tell them that the office is closed and you can take a message or they can call back tomorrow morning or whenever the office is open again. Now that if someone says, may I have Rod Sargent's home phone number? I can't say yes. I can't say no. I can give them the home phone number. They want so-and-so's home phone number, I'll give it to them.
It's in the book, right?
No, I was saying that if Mr. Sargent, I could be in Germany, mm-hmm. and the call came through and he said it was of an important nature, mm-hmm. What you're saying is that the operator person on the gate is to take the message instead of referring the call to...
No, that's not what I'm saying. What you are doing, you say, the office is open at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, or I can take a message. Now then, he will say one of three things, two things, mm-hmm. yes or no. Mm-hmm. I have to talk to Ron tonight. He said, all right, then, I'd pass the buck. I'd say, okay, just 1 second, I'll get you someone that can help.
Would that be Mr. Sargent?
Call me, if the guy says, I have to talk to Rod tonight, well, all you can say is, well, his home phone number is so-and-so. Yeah. If you happen to know he's overseas, and I have to talk to Rod tonight, get hold of Jim Crawford, get hold of me. Get hold of Jim Downing.
But not the secretary.
Get hold of the secretary, fine. But you might just pass the buck and say, look, Russ, this guy's on the call on the phone, he's got to talk to Rod Sargent tonight. What should I do? Well, I would probably take the call personally. But I think that's what I would do. And see what I could do. That's right. You don't know what to do. Pass the buck. What would I do? That depends on who it is. See, it might be Sam. Bracken?
Bracken.
Might be Sam Bracken. Well, you don't know who Sam Bracken is. I know who Sam Bracken is. We've eaten ice cream and Michelle's together, you know. This is a millionaire in Texas. Old Connecticut Navigator. Married Nick Stafford. Well, I know Sam. And he probably said, oh, yeah, Russ, here's the deal. Or it might be, I don't know what I would do, frankly. That's why you call someone who's been around a while. Because they just know more. You know, they've been around longer. They know people, they know situations, they know what's happened. They know this, they know that. The possibility of their knowing what to do is greater than the possibility of a fellow's been around a year or two. No discredit to anyone, just that's the way life is. Well, how are we doing? Okay. Someone calls for a speaker, what do you do? Bob Giro.
Only a specified speaker.
If he says, I want Lawrence Sandy for a speaker, or I want Jack Harper as speaker, refer the call to the person to call.
Refer the call to the
person. Yeah, if someone asks for a person, that I would like, to see if Gene Fuquay could speak in our church group. Give the call to Gene Fuquay. If it's in the night, say, Mr. Fuquay will be in the office tomorrow morning. If it's office. If it's Bob Giro. If they say, I want a Navigator speaker, Bob Giro. They specify someone, give them to the person they specify.
Bob,
if they don't, Bob Giroux. International Airport, Extension 37. It'll take a while to catch him and go. If someone calls for Paul Drake or Lee Ryan Adams, what do you do? Right. If you're on the gate and George, your old ski buddy, makes a personal call to you, what do you do?
Yeah. Maybe conversation.
How many shorts? 11 to 3 minutes.
Get it short.
Just give them the phone number right when they're on the next one. This is volunteering information blog. I said, don't do that.
Well, again, it's a situation. All right. Their office is their home. That's where they hang their hat and transact their business. You know, it's like somebody calling information and saying, Warren said his phone number. The same idea. That's their office. That's where they hang their hat. That's where they take care of their business. So in those cases, you'd give them their phone number. Same thing if somebody called and said, could I have Al Van Hine's phone number? Sure, Al Van Hine's phone number is so-and-so. Same idea. On this, your buddy calling you, fine. Don't talk for a half hour, 5 minutes. Just keep it down to 3 or less. Because it's a place of business. Okay, you're on the gate, you hear a fire alarm. What do you do?
Notify Will, John, are you?
Okay.
Open the gate, main gate.
Everyone agree or disagree?
Stand by for instruction.
What'd you do?
Stand by for instruction because someone on the wing has turned on the fire alarm. And they've heard it too.
In all probability, if John's here or I'm here or Will's here, we've heard it. And
she's grabbing a little piece of
it. Not necessarily.
No.
Because you know what kind of fire it is.
You wait for instructions.
Right, wait for instructions.
So you sit there in the phone and they tell you what to do.
That's right. Basically what you do is keep the phone clear. If somebody calls down and say, hey, there's a fire, you say, that's right. The fire alarm sounded.
Cool.
If it's a fellow, say, report the shot. If it's a girl, say, I need to keep this line clear for instruction.
A failure. Yeah.
keep traffic on the Glen to a minimum.
You were thinking.
If a tourist comes on and says, man, I'd love to see this place, I say, I'm sorry, our fire alarm is sounding. You may have emergency vehicles in the Glen in a few minutes. Could you please pull over to one side and park? Or you can leave. No fooling around. Fire truck roars on. I don't want this car to stop looking at the fire. Don't call the fire department. It's not your responsibility. If you're on the gate and someone tells you there's a fire, what do you do?
Where?
Get your information. Where? How big? Who's there? What's happening?
Yeah.
What's happening? And don't wish too bad we had a fire not too long ago at night. Then get hold of Will or John or myself or some relief.
Get all the information you can and then refer the car to
not necessarily. I'd call the guy. I wouldn't say you call because he may forget.
And that's what I say. Get all the information you can and call the guy.
Get the information to someone. If you hear a fire alarm, what do you do?
Head for the shop.
Sure. That's right.
Unless you're on the gate.
Cooks, turn the stove off, and leave.
Just take out the gate.
What?
Just
Oh, no, if you're on the gate, but if you're shoveling dirt, where's your fire alarm? I like that.
Bring your shovel.
That's right, seriously. If you've got a tool like a Maddox or a shovel or a pick, if you've got a vehicle, go on the shop.
Cute tobacco.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was my pocket.
That's really about it.
What's that one?
What about the Suburban?
What do you think? Suburban hours off?
Wave at them, you know. You get there.
What?
You should find out who's in.
Yeah, get who's in, write it down, trade it off.
It's not fair to gatekeeper, but he's bound to get a phone call for you.
If you want to be secretive, that's your business. You know, you can be secretive as you want. If you want people to know where you, if you want me to tell people where you are, let me see who.
I wish I had a reason to be secretive.
Well, some people don't like, don't like that. When I'm driving around, I try to remember to turn my inside lights on and turn my lights off. People can see I'm leaving the van, I'm on the van. It's something they want to get a hold of or something.
Turn the radio on.
Turn the radio on. Suburban has a two-way radio, short-wave radio.
Not in the winter, of course.
Yes, it does.
No, I mean you don't turn on the winter.
Why not?
The radio's off, don't turn on until the rush week.
Is that what it says?
Plus, the fact if you turn on, they don't have it on for sure.
How do you know?
I'm not supposed to. Well, I know what the sign says.
The sign should be changed.
Where did it say that? I thought it said Suburban leaves the radio.
It says right on the bulletin board up there.
No, here's the sign.
It says,
belay the sign. I don't care what it says. The word now is, if the Suburban roars off the van, turn the radio on. They may not turn their radio on in the Suburban. That doesn't make any difference at all.
But if they get stuck and they need some help and you can get your radio on, they're hurt.
Wouldn't that be nice? Well,
what about the pickup? You don't have a radio to pick up. I don't have it in my car.
Yeah, but the Suburban has radio.
That's right. Mazda is got a radio. That's the point. The Mazda is, you may. When I leave the Glen, I always turn it on.
The gatekeeper's got to know what knob to turn, what to do, and how to turn it on. Which radio?
That's a mess. Folks,
I think we've reached the end of our attention span.
What?
You're at the gatekeepers. You're available to the gatekeeper. Check in periodically. Let them know where you are. I would suggest you not stay in the reception center. Because they usually have Bibles here they're trying to do, and there you are talking at them. I would suggest you stay here in the castle near the phone.
Play
Yahtzee. Periodically, roar around the Glen, every hour or so. Just check buildings, kind of walk around, see everything's okay. Night watch, check the shop, you check the office, you check the castle. You drive through. We help you. Could he call back? We're almost through. We'll be through in a few minutes. Is that all right, Jack?
Yeah, that
was fine. let's get this thing over with. Check the lodge. Check Glenview. Now I check. Eagle's Nest. Eagle's Nest is no longer occupied permanently. If a conference is here, find out what rooms are occupied, so you don't go roaring into them.
Basically, it'd be the living room and kitchen.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you're checking dryers, any electrical. What's the function of the night watch?
Fire.
Fire.
fire equipment.
Yes.
Well, any kind of emergency situation, fire, gas,
and
security, to whatever extent you can do.
Security means locked doors. So
locked doors and Duke Way finding this guy wandering at night. That's the first time it ever happened, but it happened.
Windows closed.
Windows closed, yeah.
Lights off.
Unless you can't find the switch. If you can't find the switch, it's probably a nightlight on a timer. Don't unscrew the bulb. don't laugh, it's happening. We leave lights on, you know, we provide emergency exit in case of fire. Something like, you know, hearing the fire alarm go off and no lights on. And there you are, falling down the staircase, breaking your neck. So we left certain lights on, timers automatically, and people unscrew. We had a guy, this happened a few years ago. Night watch was going to the office. The touch plate had busted. He couldn't turn some lights off. He had a little bit of knowledge. You know what's the most dangerous thing in the world? A little bit of knowledge. He knew where the circuit breakers were. Finally found one that turned off the touch plate. Lights are off. Turned the boiler off also.
I'm crying.
It was January. You know, somebody just happened. If somebody had gone in the office Saturday and Sunday, what would it cost to reform the office?
Hey, Russ, on that same thing while we're talking about cold, freezing, this kind of weather, if you walk in a building that's not occupied and it's freezing cold, you know, see your breath, and notify somebody.
That's right.
You got to cancel.
Because I caught
Seriously, that is right. Like, we're fairly safe in the castle, we're fairly safe in the lodge. Of course, you don't go to the pink house. We're fairly safe in Glenview. The people live there. But a place like Eagle's Nest is very vulnerable.
Yeah, I found the heating system off twice in there on night watch. And
Eagle's Nest.
If you go in Ridgeview, don't worry about the heat meter.
Yeah. So don't. Do check the office.
Especially on the weekend.
Yeah. Check that beast, because if it's Friday night and that heat goes off for some reason, in all probability, no one's going to roar. May roar in there until Monday morning, and it'll freeze up tight as a drum.
So I would say afternoon security watch, at least in this kind of weather.
Yeah.
Check
the place out. You think these are Mickey Mouse details until you realize you may be responsible. You may be responsible for spending a lot of money.
$7,000.
Yeah.
Maybe just the word winter a long time to play that off.
Okay, we'll go over this stuff a little more extensively.
I got one question.
Yes.
So that for everybody, because we got to make it clear. But there's a key now to that print shop door, the one that has to have a key to lock it. Mm-hmm. It's now on the night watch key.
Really? Who is night watch tonight, by the way?
I have one.
Are you the privileged guard? I mean,
yes. What is that key? New key?
What's new key?
Been on there for a long time.
Yeah. That's in the print shop itself.
The print shop is
the
loading
dock.
Loading
dock.
Shop dock.
Oh, yeah. Outside.
It has to have a key to lock it. And half the time, if it's not locked, it has to lock it. So. But now there's a key on that place. I have a lock it, so there's really no excuse for all of us.
Loading dock. Well, guys, we've covered an awful lot of material tonight. It always takes more time than it should. But people have questions, and they're good. People have comments, and they're good. Personally, I don't expect you to remember everything you heard tonight. You can't do it.